This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 329 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining us back from the other side of the world, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, the always effervescent Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hi, honey, I'm home.
I thought it might be like that.
Oh, I'm so effing what? Effing what? I'm effing what? I come back and you start to insult me as soon as I arrive.
How was it?
What?
Your trip.
I didn't trip. Talking about, man. Have you been on? You're insulting people, you're making up stuff and going along. The trip was an epic adventure, my friend.
Was it?
Epic adventure. It was. It was above and beyond anything I expected.
Really?
And but then, well, I didn't expect very much.
Right.
I always believe, you know, if you keep your expectations low, there's a good chance you might exceed them.
Right.
No, it was a fabulous trip. Photographically, maybe not quite as good as I would have liked, but that's part of being in a group. You know, you're leading a group, not there photographing for yourself. So
yeah,
you don't get to. It's like running a workshop. You get what you get. You don't get upset.
Okay, so that minor disappointment that I hear in your voice was that a planning thing? Was it just?
Oh, no. The photo opportunities were fabulous.
Right.
It's just that when you're leading 12 people,
yeah,
their needs always come before yours.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So it's like if I'm setting something up that is dream come true, you're doing an off camera flash shot with a holy man on the banks of the Ganges in Varanasi as the sun sets behind him.
Yeah.
Well, you've got time to do a quick test shot, get the exposure right for everyone, and get the hell out of the shots. You know. So you know, it's not like you get there to craft and work an image. Be there and then explain the process to everyone and get out of the way and hope they get a great image and makes their experience great. In no way even remotely disappointed, because I don't go there with the expectation of getting hundreds of great images. If I come away from this trip with half a dozen images that I really like, I'm pretty happy, you know?
Yeah, and it looks like you've come away with a few more than that, so.
No, I'll probably scrape up half a dozen.
Yeah.
I would say.
Okay.
There's images that what I'm talking about is crafted great photos.
Yeah.
But I've got lots of images that I really like, not so much because the image is particularly strong, but because the story behind the image, the situation, whatever it may have been, is all around behind that as well. So when we're we're photographing in this village, well, it's not a village, it's a nomadic tribe's temporary overnight stay, so it's really just twigs and blankets thrown over twigs.
Right.
So you can't go to the village. Photographing, and these are nomadic tribe of snake charmers.
Wow.
So their history has been they would hunt snakes and capture snakes and charm snakes and all this kind of stuff. And the prince of the area, who's taken us around as our guide, says to us, you know, I don't think any Westerner's ever been in here before.
Wow.
So, yeah, when you're having an experience like that,
that's awesome.
Experience should always, in my book, outweigh the photo.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to take great photos, but not at the expense of the experience.
Right.
Yeah, if you get so obsessed in running around trying to take photos that you're not even looking,
yeah,
that's not good.
Right.
Why do you travel all the way around the world? Is photography should be adding to your journey, not taking away the emotional connection with humans, the great moments that you're seeing, the once in a lifetime opportunity that you're going through, and all you can care about is getting the next image.
Right.
So there's times during that particular example, I'd just stand there and look, or smile at the kids, or just chase some kids just for fun of it, or just act like a fool, which would come as no surprise to our listeners. So that kind of stuff that overrides the need to take the photograph.
Okay.
But you still got to take the photographs.
Yeah.
Because that's who you are as a person.
Yeah.
But it's also it's also my job.
Yeah.
So I need images from that. But you know, of that experience in that particular nomadic tribe, my favorite photographs were the casual ones I took with my iPhone.
Oh, really?
As opposed to the ones, and admittedly, I haven't gone through the card and looked at the photos properly from that point anyway. But I captured using a little Tintype app some fabulous iPhone shots.
Right.
That to me capture the place and the people perfectly, and are timeless because of their. It's done with tintype. It's got this. There's no age look to it. There's a couple of photos there could have been of American Indians from 150 years ago, kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Yep.
So yeah, so it's this balance between trying to get images for the sake of the image and remembering what you're supposed to be there for in the first place as a human being, you know. So to me, it's always trying to temper those two things. And I say that very early on in tours, you know, I'm not here to take we'll take thousands of images, but I'm here for half a dozen good ones,
right.
Really good ones, and I'm here to make sure I savour what we're doing. And all the time, we were on the banks of on a boat on the Ganges in Varanasi, and I'm saying to everyone, the sun is rising. There's this festival on, so all these people have come. There's thousands of people have come in from out of town, from the villages, to bathe in the Ganges.
Yeah.
And everyone's shooting like crazy, and I'm saying, just stop for a sec, guys, and just breathe and look.
Yeah.
Remember where we are. Think about where we are. Think of the history. This city is one of the oldest living cities in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a living history of at least 6,000 years.
Wow.
Talking about times when the pyramids were being built.
Yeah.
This was a living city. Yeah, and we're seeing life that hasn't necessarily changed that much since then.
Yeah.
Save it, you know. Take that. Don't just try to capture that next photo, but take a couple of minutes at everything and go, wow. You know, allow yourself to wow.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
Watch a documentary. Yeah. You know, watch Dave. They're all going to do it better than you can do. They're all going to do it better than I can do. Go to David Attenborough and look at it and be awestruck at the stuff that these people can do. But it's the same thing. You're not having an experience if you're stuck in it watching a TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take enough photographs, that's really all it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was started off fairly deep, dude.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, not even being a smart ass for once. So, yeah, look, it was a remarkable trip. The things I was looking forward to the most at some points became lesser. And the things that I thought, oh, that'd be kind of cool to do, became the highlights.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a surprise. So we spent some time in a place called Zainabad, which is at the deserts near Pakistan, in the salt deserts.
Wow.
And I was looking forward to it because I love going out there, but, you know, I wasn't expecting much of it, you know.
Right.
I've got to tell you, I lost my heart there.
Oh, really?
You know, I ache to be back there.
Wow.
The experience of being out there was unlike any, and I've had some experiences in my life. But they were out there was just a remarkable place, and we've got big plans which we can talk about later in the show about going back there.
So, what in particular about that area, the salt deserts, had that much of an impact on you?
Well, so salt deserts are surrounded by villages, mm-hmm. which we would call small towns,
sure.
really, yeah, and slightly smaller, you know, smaller country towns. But it's where the real India is, where the real people still are,
yeah.
where the real life is still being lived.
Yeah.
So as opposed to going to a city, and let's face it,
yep.
yeah, every city's got a certain amount of commonalities.
Yes.
And a certain commonality of life.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's some you go to India, it's, you know, oh my God, the traffic's, there's nuts, and everyone says the traffic. And yeah, of course, there were complete differences, but there's also a lot of familiarity as well.
Sure.
When you go out and see how people truly live and probably have lived for who knows how long,
yeah.
when you go to a place where, and this is what I love the most about travel, when you get to these sort of places, when you go to a place where the people you are meeting are as curious about you as you are about them,
yeah,
you're in a truly special place.
Yeah.
You're no longer going and taking as a photographer. You know, we go to places that we take, you know, we're taking images, we're capturing, we're sneakily taking photos of people with our big lenses. You know, we're taking all the time.
Yeah.
But when you go to a place where that curiosity exists about both from both sides, there's a lot of give and take.
Yeah,
and that is a much more to me a much more enjoyable experience.
Yeah,
and it's very special. So the laughs you have with people, even though there's no common language, the shots that they want to take of you, the shots you take of them, the kids that just want to just play games with you, it's just out of the sheer novelty of seeing you.
Yeah,
that's special because you know that's real.
Yeah. You know what, that you've reminded me of the couple of days we spent in the homestay in Borneo.
Yes, I bet.
You know, it's exactly the same thing.
And everyone's just curious about the others.
Yeah.
And there's an openness, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
And you'll notice if you go to anywhere in the world where there's a lot of tourists, there's a reticence isn't quite the right word. There's a wariness from the locals. Yeah, that you can break down quite easily with some honest smiles. And as an example, we we pulled up on the last part of our tour, on the very last day, in, or second last day, in fact. Everyone was tired. They didn't want to do what was on the program. So we kind of came up with this alternate thing, which was basically just driving around the country. And we saw this old man beating the ground with a stick under a tree with a couple of big bullocks and a woman standing in the sari. And they had like this little thatched hut there. And it was kind of a cool-looking scene, you know. So we're in, and I'm telling you, we're in the middle of nowhere. I don't think a bus has ever been down this dirt track in history, you know. So we're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And I jump out of the bus straight away, and two of the guys jump out, walk to the back of the bus, and just start shooting these people. And I said, "Guys, stop, stop." And I walked around, and it wasn't easy to get to where they were. I walked around, walked up, and shook hands with the man. And I didn't shake hands with the lady, but I sort of bowed and showed some respect and smiled and kind of said, hello, in how best we could first. Yeah. Do you mind if we take some photos? I brought a human element to not making them feel like they're zoo exhibits. Overall, for the 12 people that were incredibly well behaved, incredible group. They all got along really well. There was great synergy among everybody. But just every now and then, there was just something that, once again, that desire to shoot override that basic humanality and experience. So once you got up and introduced and said hello, that dynamic changed, and the photographs were far better anyway because they were not uncomfortable. Yeah, they understood. Well, okay, all of a sudden there's a bus of 7 or 8 Westerners who I've never seen before in my life, and I've never seen a bus on this road before in my life. So that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that to me is a proper travel experience when you can have that shared, that give and take, and I love that. I think that's what I travel for. I mean, I love. But I love that. I mean, I'm a people person. I love that brief connection with someone, even if it's for a couple of minutes. Yeah, every photo I've got that I like from the trip, there's a moment there that there's been some form of interaction that's given me a connection that's strengthened that moment in my mind. It's not just another photo I took. It's a photo I took of somebody that I had a brief moment with, or there was some laugh or something that elevates the photograph from a shot of yet another person walking down the street or another person with something on their head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Me and Malcolm were kind of joking on the tour a little bit, if you just, I'm trying to come up with a company name for our joint partnership. And we came up with, for a while, jokingly, with LHF Photography Tours.
Okay.
And it's low-hanging fruit. You know, in India, it's easy to take a person of someone standing in a doorway.
A photo.
In a colourful sari. It's easy to take a photograph of someone walking down the street with something on their head. It's easy to take a photo of crazy traffic because that's the low-hanging fruit that's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's hard to go and capture an image that captures somebody that is a reflection of your experience there, which whilst those other things are, they're a passing experience as opposed to something you felt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, yeah. And all heavy. What a weird episode this is, dude.
This is pretty much what I was expecting.
We might have to leave off all the other stuff for next week. Yeah, that's anything urgent. But
I'm happy to go long tonight if you are.
Yeah. So I have to before I forget though. I have a confession to make.
Oh yeah.
I listened to the podcast.
Which one?
Our one.
No, which episode?
Well, there was one in the show notes that was saying there was supposed to be good stuff about me, so I had to listen to that one.
Who said that?
No, in the show notes, there was something, and then I went and listened, and you talked all over him, and you shot him down, and it was our man, Dave Marlin. And, and it's like, oh, that's enough of me talking about myself. How about you talk about me for a while? And, but I did agree. I only listened to a couple of minutes because I realized talk about me. But there was a moment that I really enjoyed that David was saying that he really loves how I'd gone there and captured differently than the way I normally do.
Which I disagreed with.
And you disagree, and that's the part I loved.
Why?
So I completely agree with your viewpoint. That sorry, it doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't.
What I call the SSDC syndrome.
What's that?
Yeah, the same shit, different channel. Yeah, you're in another country.
Yeah.
You're in this exotic place. You're in these amazing things with these amazing people. but you keep, it's hard to break past that thing that you do. As you said, yeah. The lighting angles, the poser, all that stuff
yeah.
that you pulled apart.
Was it was exactly textbook right. Glyn Lavender.
Exactly, for better or worse.
I have no problem with it.
Yeah,
no
problem with it at all. And I wasn't taking it anyway in a negative form, but you're so right. And this is where I think where we try so hard to grow as photographers is yep. to get out of that SSDC.
Yep.
You know, we go to this place, well, how do I capture it differently? How do I capture it differently than just a photograph in Melbourne or something, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff you can't, because that's innately how you see. And you might not necessarily like how you see. You might want to see better or more and different, and or how you see someone else's work and go, oh, I wish I could see like that, you know?
Yeah.
But you see how you see.
And yeah, exactly.
And you hope that you're developing and changing over time. But if you look at those images I take in India now
yeah.
and look at my body of work from the last 12 months,
yeah,
yeah, same shit, different channel. so spot on with that. I totally agreed with that.
Yeah, thank you.
And
it's interesting that you should have picked up on that, because just in the last 48 hours, although I downloaded it 12 months ago, I finally got to sit down and read David Duchemin's free ebook 10.
Yes. Okay, so that's 10 points to making you a better photographer or something, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 ways to improve your photography without buying new gear. And all of the things that he talks about are the things that I see you do with your photography all of the time.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a good way. In the, you know, you work angles, because I've shot with you, I've seen you work different angles, I've seen you use different focal lengths on, you know, things, and it's just interesting. And the great thing for anyone who hasn't read that free ebook, go to Craft and Vision, download it, have a read. It'll take you half an hour to read it.
Steal it.
Hey?
Steal it. It's free.
Yeah, that's right. Get a pirated version of it. Yeah. but my point is, it really is worth the read. Even if you are comfortable with where you're at as a photographer, he gives you exercises to go off and do. And most of them are an hour long exercise.
If you're comfortable where you are at as a photographer, take up golf.
Okay. Yeah, good.
If you are comfortable, take up golf.
Okay.
There's nothing else here for you to see.
So I phrased it incorrectly.
But it's a good point, though. It's just that you do say, because people, I'm not going to get any better. Bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? Shoot through the shit, which is a David Duchemin phrase. It might not be quite as crassly put as that.
Right.
But, you know, if you're comfortable, you're not growing. And what's the point of doing the same thing over? I hate doing the same stuff over and over.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much half of my photos bore me to tears.
Yeah, right.
You said in the past, I can't believe how unaffected you are, how unconnected you are with your photographs. That's because they bore me to tears.
Yeah, right.
Oh, another great lit portrait of a fabulous photo. But at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of that way.
Yeah.
Because you'd love to be able to see something different and done that somehow different and felt something different and connected. Yeah, that's what we want as photographers. And so we're all in some way stagnant in parts of our photography, you know.
Is part of your problem the fact that you don't get out and shoot for yourself enough?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. When you're shooting for workshops, you have to keep a formula. You have to keep it as far as you need to teach these visual lessons. So yeah, absolutely stifles you absolutely. But the other problem is, of course, if you do it often enough, then maybe you forget how to do it differently.
Yeah,
you forget that pathway to difference because you just keep doing the same stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So and that's why I definitely agree with what you're saying. Yeah, I look at the images. Yeah. You know, this is great old guy. And this is what I'm saying about we're setting up this guy on the steps of Varanasi, and and you've got this off camera flash stuff going, and the scene's amazing, the guy's amazing, but you don't get to craft the image.
Yeah,
you don't get to have that chance to grow and say, well, how else is it? And it's only actually by now. I look at Malcolm's shot from that, and he's got this slightly different take on it. I go, oh, I wish I'd seen that.
Right.
I love how he's seen that differently than me, because to me, he's got a sweep of how the buildings and steps come down this guy, which speaks more to me than my shot does.
Right.
And so it's that taking the time to take a shot. Yeah, and it's one of the reasons I love Bill Geckos. I was talking about Bill Geckos today, the guy who photographs his daughter in Vermeer-style shots.
Okay.
He does one. Yeah, he might do four or five photos a year at most.
Oh, right.
He'll spend months playing that one photograph.
Wow.
You know, and when he goes and does a shoot with his daughter, it's to capture an image.
Wow.
And that's so different from the way we shoot these days, where we're shooting the crap out of everything. Yeah, yeah. We'll take a million photos.
Yep.
Of course, we're not going to be happy with them because, well, we've got so many.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to craft an image,
yeah,
and you're prepared to put the time in and the work in, if I'd stood there with that guy in the Ganges and let's say the sun wasn't setting, it was going to stay there for an hour, and had time to shoot through my normal stuff,
mm-hmm.
I've got them. Well, now what else? Well, either you can hit one of two points. Either you'll hit nothing. There's nothing. I can't see anything else to shoot. Not good.
Yeah.
Or you might walk around it and see something different.
Yeah.
You might put on a different lens and just try a different viewpoint and see something, feel something different. Yeah, you might, if you take the time to try and craft that image into something better, or maybe better is not even the right word, maybe something different than how you normally see it, then that may be where the growth is.
Yeah.
You know, if every single landscape photo you do is with your ultra wide angle lens, leave it behind and take out your 70 to 200.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like if every portrait you do is with your 85mm 1.8, maybe put on a 35.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, change the viewpoint, change the feel, change the story, change how you see an image.
Mm-hmm. All right. So do you want to talk about some of these images you've emailed?
So did the email come through?
Yeah.
I don't even know what image I'm going to pull. First, I've got to talk about a funny. So there's two shots of a guy with hands there.
Oh, okay. Are they not the same image?
They are not the same image, and they're not taken by the same photographer even on the same day or on the same tour.
What?
So image number one, the one with the hand slightly closer, is my image.
Okay, well, see, the way they've come through on the email, they're not side by side. Okay, yes, I can see the one that's closer, yes.
There's one that's closer, and there's one where it's a little bit further away. You can see the thumb.
You can see the cuff.
Yeah, and the thumb.
Yep.
Okay. So I meet this guy in this abandoned city, and have a little chat with him. I said, I love these hands. Yeah,
right.
I didn't think much of him. He was just yet another old guy with a beard, yeah, and a white turban. I've got plenty. Yeah, they are the true low hanging fruit.
Right.
But he had all these rings. So I thought, yeah, I'd love to just get that detail shot. You know, I don't do detail. So once again, I'm trying to think outside my normal same stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't do this sort of stuff. So I want to capture this, and I moved his hands into a few different positions, and end up liking this one the best.
Right.
Took the shot, had a little chat, blah blah blah. Off I went.
Okay.
And then about 7 or 8 days later, the tour's ending. I'm on the bus. We're driving like a 6-hour bus drive back to Delhi, and Nick Raines, the famous Australian landscape photographer, is running the Leica Academy tour over there, just behind us. So he's a few days behind us in a lot of the same places.
Right.
And he comments on one of my photos, or likes one of my photos of me covered in powder from Holi.
Yeah.
So I just go, "Oh, well, what's he up to?" And I click on his page, and there's all these images from the Leica Academy, and there's the other image.
You're kidding.
That's Nick Raines' image. Yeah, almost exactly the same angle. Almost, yeah.
Wow.
Now, I'm not implying in any way that he copied. Yeah, not remotely. It's just this coincidence. You're in the same place.
That's amazing.
With the same character there. He's probably there every single day. And we've both seen a very similar vision.
Yeah.
And he may have photos of the guy, which I don't, but the one that he posted was so similar. It's quite irony. And first, I'm looking at it. Is it the same guy? Checking the rings. Oh, it's the same damn guy. You know. So I thought that was highly amusing.
Yeah.
That was pretty darn cool. Another image I want to talk about. So that was just a coincidental sort of image.
Yeah.
There's one there. The whole group of us.
Yes.
So that was our meeting up with all the photographers in Varanasi.
Yeah.
We ended up meeting with about, I don't know, it's probably 40 or 50 of them.
Yeah, right.
Now, I've got to say, it was pouring down with rain that morning.
Right.
I get this message as we're 10 minutes away from there saying, oh, they've cancelled because of the weather.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. And so three or four of our group have stayed back at the hotel because they weren't feeling overly well or whatever, or tired. And then I get this other, then I'm scrolling through the message. Oh, no, it's back on again. The weather's clear. Oh, thank God. So,
people grow up in Los Angeles or something?
we're running like 20 minutes late for the meet.
Not used to seeing rain. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of rain.
Oh, okay.
So about 20 minutes later, so we arrive, and they're all kind of, you know, oh, Mr. Glean, sir, all sorts of stuff. And they've all gathered around and put me up on this podium and stood there.
Right.
Waiting for the words. I felt like Jesus on the Mount, waiting for the words of wisdom. And the tour group, because we're only 5 days in or something at this stage.
Yeah.
But the ones that knew me already knew what I'm like.
Yeah.
The ones who didn't know me already knew what I'm like. a little bit over the top. Well, there's me not knowing, not having a word to say. It's like, hello, everybody. I didn't know what we're doing.
Yeah, right.
My thought was we're going to go there. We're going to say hello, bit of a shake people's hands, and they're going to lead us on a bit of a show as their spot.
Yeah, right.
Show
as their area.
They thought I was going to lead them
I was going to say they've all joined your tour.
and so it was like kind of awkward. So of course, first thing is I pulled Malcolm in straight away for a bit of support. Yeah, Malcolm, come up here, dude. Yeah, and we just sort of thanked them thank you for coming out. It's lovely to meet you all. Hopefully, we can have a lovely afternoon. We'll just walk around and maybe you can show us some stuff. And we're stuck on the top of this temple in the middle, and we'd walked all the way up. And so we're going, is there anything to shoot here? They're going, no. We're like, well, what did we come all about here for? Anyway, after 10 or 15 minutes of a fair degree of uncomfortableness, we just started walking. And they led us through this, like, under alleyways, underneath buildings and streets that no one would ever know it even exists and stuff.
Yeah, right.
And they're coming out of this little courtyard where these children are playing games and all this sort of stuff, all this life that you just don't see if you're a tourist because you'd never find your way into these places. So it ended up being a really good afternoon. And then just towards the end, I set up a flash shot and Malcolm set up an LED light shot of a couple of holy men and we photographed them. And so we tried to get as many of the group of Varanasi photographers through as possible.
Yeah.
Hence our group of 10 or so that we were, instead of being 10 people trying to craft a shot, it was 50 people trying to craft. hence why my photograph of the man on the steps of Varanasi, not quite what I want.
Yeah. You know?
But they were a great group, and it was just it was a great cultural experience just to share with all these people. And I think the best thing about it was some of these guys can shoot. They are seriously, seriously good photographers.
Yeah, right.
And they're all using just like the most basic gear
they've
got. Yeah, they've got very little in the way of the expensive camera gears, the high-end stuff that our group are toting around.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, probably a good quarter of these guys could shoot the living daylights out of anyone in our tour group.
Wow.
Impossible. Including Malcolm himself.
Yeah. Especially and were they shooting with fast glass or just kit lenses?
No, nothing. Yeah, they've got like old 30-year-old lenses hammered onto 20-year-old bodies and stuff.
Nice.
It's all all basic stuff. There wouldn't have been probably the most expensive camera there would have been something like a Nikon D7000, which is a mid. But they know how to shoot. They know their environment. They know where. And the Indians probably they're a little bit more in touch with spirituality, maybe we'll say, as a general race than Australians.
Sure.
And this is the holy of holy places. So they put a reverence into some of the images in their composition that we just don't necessarily see quite so much. So there's and when they put an image up online, they post some words about feelings.
Okay.
Connect to this image. And so it's a little bit more of an enriched experience, I guess you'd say, as far as their images go.
Yeah.
Let me just look up. They are called, just trying to find what the name of their group, the DSLR group is what they're called.
Yep.
But if anyone wants to join them, because it's open to anyone, you don't have to be in India.
Oh, okay.
Digital Showcase of Lens Riders.
Right.
Yes, I don't understand it either. But they've got 23,000 members on their group.
Whoa.
So Digital Showcase of Lens Riders, DSLR group, go and join them. Yeah, if you want to, you'll see some great photos of these guys. And yeah, every day you're seeing amazing some very, very good images being posted. Some average ones, of course, but some
like
very,
any
very
group.
Good. Yeah. So yeah, and if you want to see some great stuff about India and places in India you probably never get a chance to experience because they're spread all across India. Yeah, go for it. You know.
Yeah.
So they're pretty good.
Wow.
There's an image of a guy sitting having a smoke early morning.
Yes.
So. This was taken on the first. So holy as a festival is very hard to understand, both in its religious significance, but also when it runs,
oh.
and when the, because it kind of travels from town to town, it kind of moves across the country like a wave. There's certain points, certain places that are more important on certain days. For example, the thing we went to shoot, the place that we want, this temple that we wanted to go photograph where everyone just goes nuts.
Yeah.
You arrive and the guy goes, oh, no, that was yesterday.
Oh, what?
Going, well, what do you mean it was yesterday? It was. It says here on the thing that the 24th. And they're going, oh, no, that's holy. I'm going, yeah, what's this? They're going, oh, that's like blah, 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 something, you know, before holy. And it's like, and so we're just gutted, you know, this thing that we wanted to go and
experience.
See was not going to be open to us, you know?
Yeah, right.
So we're just pulling our hair out, you know? So we said, look, can we go there anyway? And just so we can see it, you know? And just you go, oh, yeah, you can do that. No, it opens at 4:30. So we go there at 4:30, we sort of line up, and it's this throng of people.
Mm.
And the doors open, and these people pile in, and they're in a religious fervor, and there's powder going everywhere, and it's going absolutely off tap, and it's nuts.
And exactly what you were expecting.
Exactly what we were expecting. I said to Malcolm, if this is the tape, if yesterday was the real one, this is nothing. What the hell was yesterday like? But here was the sad thing. So there was only three guys came with us from our group who wanted. So there's only like five people came on the extension with us to Holi.
Wow.
Two of that. One was a non-photographer, so she didn't come in. Right. One was a girl, lady, wife, one of the guys didn't want to come for some reason. Not a wife. She paid to come to this extension. And three guys.
Right.
Well, we pull up at the entrance to go in, and the guy, and there's a sign above the door saying no photography.
What?
And I've seen thousands of photos from inside these temples.
Yeah.
There's no photography. And we're going, what? And so the three guys went and sat down against a wall, and me and Malcolm just charged in with the throng.
Yeah.
And we're taking photos everywhere. and so a lot of other people. But if a guard sees you, he tells you off.
Right.
Start taking photos again until the next guard sees you and tells you off. And that's what everyone's doing, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so it's going off. It's absolutely pandemonium, but impossible to get photographs. Yeah, the best place to go is up on the top, up on this like first floor, but it's all locked. You can't get up there.
Yeah,
no one understands what's going on, so it's absolute crazy. So we're trying to shoot. We're trying to do the best we can, and the throng of humanity. They sort of come in, they go crazy, and then they kind of all get shoved out again, out of the temple. It took us about, I don't know. Then we're out the front of that, just going nuts for ages. It was all going off in the courtyard area. So we're photographing that, and powder and water, and people taking selfies with us. We're just going crazy. It was a ball, an absolute ball of an experience for a photographer.
Wow.
We go try and find these guys. It's 45 minutes later. We go, and they're still sitting exactly the same spot. These are photographers. Well, no, they're not. They're picture takers.
Right.
They're not photographers, because a photographer would have been in there regardless.
Yeah.
A photographer would have been going for the experience. And we're going, what are you doing? And they're going, oh, we're just trying to think about, decide what to do. I said, well, you've been deciding what to do for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And outside it's going off. There's photos everywhere.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, okay. So that was kind of, yeah. But and then our guide says, we're pointing upstairs. He goes, oh, if you pay money, you can go up there.
Oh, you're kidding.
A, why don't you tell us you can't take photos? B, why don't you tell us this as well? We're here to take bloody photos. We're photographers. and it said, so this is it. It's not on anymore. No, it's not on anymore. This is it. This is. So we go back the next day. There's even more people there, Bruce. There's even more people. But during the course that day, early in the morning, these two Indian photographers come up to me.
Yeah.
Introduce themselves. They're from Delhi.
Yeah.
And they walk up to me, and we're by this big stepwell in this place where there's sort of nothing going on. They walk up and they go, can you tell us what's happening for Holi? Going, hang on, you guys are Indian. Yeah. And you speak Hindi, right? Yeah. So you can talk to all these people here, right? Yeah. And you've got no idea? Yeah, no one knows what's going on. We talk to everybody. No one knows what's going on. So how the hell are we supposed to have an idea? So we show up at this temple again, and now it's 10 times as crazy.
Are you kidding?
10 times as more people. There's a photo there. This is from the first day of like people inside the temple going nuts, got like a yellow arm up in the air.
Yeah.
And there's 10 times as many people as that in this one. This one was scary to get into.
Right.
We'd convinced one of the other guys to come in with us this time because we've been told – if you pay, you can get up the top. So and all he wanted to do for this trip was to go in and get up the top and get these photos from above. So we convinced him. But the press to get into the temple was 10 times stronger than it was before.
So it's like a mosh pit.
Well, no, far worse, to the point where it was borderline extremely scary.
Right.
I nearly killed a 70-year-old guy simply because I was being so heavily crushed against this brick wall that I mean, I was being crushed to the point where I was starting to struggle to breathe.
Wow.
And this guy was crushed between me and the wall, and he was about a quarter my size. And I managed somehow to get my elbows against the wall and shove him out of the way. Then I was face planted against this brick wall.
Yeah? Wow.
And you have no control of where you're going, and you're going down steps.
Whoa.
Slippery and covered in water.
Wow.
And water and slippery powder. So it's a dangerous thing. And we're all barefoot. So I've gone through this maelstrom for 40 minutes. I had one person stand on my toes. I have no idea how that happened. it's just crazy. But so we're in this thing. We're shooting again, yeah? And today it's all locked. There's no one upstairs. There's no way of getting upstairs. There's no one at all.
Right.
So yeah, it's like, what's going on? Then this guy comes up to us. He goes, "And follow me," in English.
Right.
And I don't know why, but I trusted him. He didn't. I said, Malcolm and Felix, the two guys there, I said, "Come, follow me, follow this guy." And this guy drags us to the very front. So at the front, there's this temple, and there's these gods and these holy men up there, and they're throwing powder and spraying water. And for some reason, they're opening and closing curtains.
Okay. I don't know why.
They open the curtain for the god, they close the curtain for the god. They open the curtain for the god, people throw flowers, they close. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
But in front of that, there's this like caged off area, like there's a fenced off area.
Yeah.
And all the throngs behind that. And there's some people inside. This guy drags to the front, and he goes, "Donation."
Right.
What's going on? What's going on here? So I pull out 50 rupees, like a buck.
Yeah.
And we'd been told to get up top. Malcolm actually got told by a guard, you know, 500, 1,000, 2,000, whatever you want to pay, we'll get you up top.
Right.
So they brought in, Malcolm only had a 1,000 rupee, and Felix only had a 500 rupee. So right. 10 bucks, 20 bucks.
Yeah.
So they hand those over. This guy hands us these three pink ribbons, scarfs.
Okay.
Ties them around our neck, opens this gate, and lets us into this sealed-off area in the front of the temple.
Right.
No idea what's going on. But we're there. Now we can shoot however we want. We can go crazy. The only thing you can't shoot is the gods.
Right.
Yeah, holy. But you can shoot the throngs and the people all looking at.
Wow.
We were in there for like 15 minutes.
Wow.
That was by far a better experience than standing on a balcony photographing a bunch of people, because that's living outside, watching people do it, being a voyeur.
Yeah.
And we were living it by being in that throng of people and I'm going, "Happy Holi," and holding my camera up. And you can't see through your camera because it's covered in powder.
Yeah.
So it's aiming and hoping. Yeah, there's no way of composing an image because it's just press. Yeah. So I'm holding my camera up over the gate, and they're all yelling and put their arms up and yelling, "Happy Holi," and throwing powder and flowers at me and stuff. That's an experience, you know? That made it, even if the photos are no good, and most of them aren't.
Yeah.
That's a great experience.
So the question is, does the powder get on the lens? And if so, do you worry about it or what?
You have to worry about it because it's going to show up on you. Because if a big clump of it lands on your lens, it's going to show up.
Yeah.
But over I went in that temple three times that day into that maelstrom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And outside with stuff just going everywhere. I got powder on my lens maybe two or three times.
Okay.
And it's just been fairly, you get used to it. It's like a timing. You can tell when the powder's coming. To angle your lens down, and I'm using my 15-30 Tamron, which is a fully exposed front element.
Yeah,
really. So taking a big chance, but it's the right lens for the job.
Yeah,
yes, and the powder gets into everything, gets through. Yeah, we were covered. There's photos of us absolutely, just completely covered in this powder.
Yeah, I've seen them,
and so it gets into everything. I've still got some of my body is still stained from this powder.
Wow,
I've been back 4 or 5 days, whatever it's been. So my body looks like it's been bruised from this red and green sort of powder stain. So it gets in there, and your camera gets stuff on it, but you know what? Who cares? Yeah. Sometimes I know we're precious about our cameras, but you know, that's just money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can replace the camera. You can never replace the experience.
No.
Oh, I'm not going to go in there and have an amazing, incredible, once in a lifetime experience because my $1,000 camera might get dirty.
Yeah.
You know, take the chance. What if it doesn't get dirty?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was. All the powder just brushed off my cameras. Everything's working fine.
Oh, nice.
So it's no drama, A little bit of care, a little bit of preparation, and have the damn experience, yeah. So the actual day of Holi is when they go nuts, okay? So this is just a build-up, but this is when they go nuts in the streets and all the families and all the people party and stuff. So when I travel, I only sleep like 3 hours a night. So I'm up early every single day, And so of the morning of Holi, I've decided, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go for a walk before the sun rises. Just see how the city wakes up, because I hadn't had the chance to do that the whole trip. And so I captured two of them, and as we're talking about photographing for yourself, we talked about this before. I captured two of my favorite images from the trip just in that hour or so as the sun was rising.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And I told you to put this guy on the railway line just stopping for a smoko.
Yeah.
It's a simple, it's a low-hanging fruit shot. It's a simple shot.
Yeah.
You know? It's a guy having a smoke with the warm sunlight behind. But, yeah, it's just, what a moment. We're in the middle of this country of 1.3 billion people. Everywhere is crazy nuts.
Yeah.
But this guy's having a quiet smoke on a railway line. And there's only him and me there.
Yeah.
And everyone else is quiet. Nice. Yes, that photo speaks to me because when I look at the photograph, I feel where I am. I smell where I am. Not very pleasant. I smell where I am. The sounds or the lack of sounds come back to you. And that peacefulness comes back to me. And his whole manner reflects that calm before the storm.
Yeah.
And so with the day of Holi coming on, it's going to be nuts. There's this image I captured in the morning, which is the calm before the storm.
Yeah.
And then, funnily enough, there's another image from the same morning of, and I'm walking down this little alleyway, and this is even before the sun's actually risen, so it's before that previous shot.
Yeah.
And this guy's come out of nowhere and said, "Come in here," and called me into this little dairy in this little shed. Yeah. And there's these cows.
Yeah.
And this guy sitting having his early morning smoko. He's just about to light up.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there. He's got these bullocky cows in the background. This one lamp, this one little light bulb.
Yeah.
Get this warm light, yep. And then the cool blue light of early morning.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, you know, it's. I love the shot. The only thing that could have made it better is if he'd been lighting his cigarette the other way, so you could see the match in the cigarette.
Yeah,
his
hand. Right. Yep.
But yeah, you know, it's an emotive. It once again brings back that calm and that peace and that beautiful moment. So the two of my favorite images from the trip was when I just went out for myself.
Nice.
So allowing yourself the time to just go and whatever comes up. And then the rest of the day was complete madness of just going crazy. But once again, no one in our group wanted to go out.
What?
All wanted to stay in the hotel.
What?
So I know. So me and Malcolm went out into the streets. And by chance, when I'm walking down this railway line.
Yeah.
Followed to a point, and these kids come. It's now getting to like 7 o'clock in the morning, so the sun's been up half an hour sort of thing,
right.
And the people are starting to come out, and they're starting to get into their hot. It's holy, it's their day.
Yeah.
And so this little street party going on with kids and mums and wives and grandmothers and fathers and grandfathers, and they're all just chunking powder and spraying foam at me, and we're all having a laugh. And I'm walking down this little side street, and it's all going off, and there's people offering me food and drinks and powering me with stuff and doing selfies, and I'm taking a wonderful experience. So I've bolted back to the hotel, grabbed Malcolm, and said, "You've got to come. It's happening. This is what we're here for."
Yeah.
So we went down, spent a great hour down with these people, and we ate the food and drank with them and danced with them, and just we holied.
Awesome. You
know? And we got some okay shots out of it, but we had the experience of the thing that we went for, not just the photos of people having the experience.
Yeah.
So, and now the previous day, we'd been sitting in the hotel lobby, the only place you could get Wi-Fi, and met two ladies from New York.
Right.
And we'd come back, and they're just sitting in the lobby having getting decent Wi-Fi. Yeah. And we said, "What do you?" And we're covered. And they're like, "Oh, you guys have had a great time." I said, "Well, what are you guys doing?" They said, "Oh, well, everyone said it's not safe for us to go out." And I knew they were leaving that morning. They were leaving like 11:30 that morning. It's like quarter past nine or something. And I said, "You know, what are you doing now? Do you have half an hour?" Yeah. And they've gone, "Yeah." I said, "Do you trust Malcolm and I to guide you safely to have a great holy experience and bring you back in time for you to shower, clean up?" Oh, we'd love that, you know.
Yeah.
So we took them back down this alleyway, and the people were even nicer. And because there's these two women now, not just guys, and they got covered in powder, and one of the ladies is African American with massive hair, and everyone a wig, so they're having this all. They're getting covered. They're taking the photos. We're taking photos of them having the experience. They're having a ball,
Yeah.
And they came back and said, "Oh, thanks so much. That's the holy we wanted, and we're too scared to have."
Wow.
This is what we could have done for our tour group. We gave them this safe, wonderful experience, And so they went off, tears of joy, and me and Malcolm felt pretty good about ourselves.
Yeah, that's nice.
The day before, so still the same day before, not long after the New York ladies, three German backpackers, girls, about 20, came and stayed at this place. And this place is a dive, I've got to tell you.
Right.
And they came down and they're upset and things aren't good and somebody had tried to break into their room during the night and all this sort of stuff, and they want to leave right now. We want to go. And the guy's going, "It's holy. Everything's closed till 1 o'clock. There's nothing we can do. You can't put you on a bus. We can't put you on a train. There's nothing we can do."
Yeah.
And they're really upset. And so, A, we sorted out the hotel and reassured them about why things had happened. The guy who broke into the room is a bit of a nutter. He lives in the hotel. Right. He tried to get into our room. He tried to get in the room opposite. You know, so it's not uncommon for this particular guy to do it. So they felt better knowing what they weren't targeted.
Yeah.
And we said, again, do you girls feel safe enough to come out with Malcolm and I? We're big guys. We'll take you to have an experience of the holy, which is what you came for, that will be a happy memory rather than you leaving at 1 o'clock having had a horrible memory. And they did. So we took them down the alleyways again. And they had a great experience, but it was changing.
Right.
Now the youth, the 15, the 25s, have had quite a bit more to drink.
Oh, okay.
There's a few less mums there now. The sensible people were starting to drift away. And the more larrikin guys were starting to show up. So we had a really good experience still. But on the way back, all of a sudden, in a flash of an eye, six motorbikes pulled up, all with five guys on the back of each one, and jumped up. And all of a sudden, me and Malcolm and these three young, attractive German backpackers are surrounded by 30 drunken, drugged guys.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. 29 of them were respectful and happy and just happy to give us that. Yeah. So it's a thing to hug. You know, they'll put colour on, then they'll give you a hug.
Right.
So and all the way through with the ladies and the girls is, you can hug us, don't hug the girls. You can put the colour on, do not touch.
Yeah.
And not one person broke that. Except this one guy who'd been a pig, grabbed this girl's bum.
Right.
Yeah. And she was the most sensitive of all of them and was already struggling with crowds even before that.
Oh.
So she went a bit off. So it got a bit ugly because I got right in this guy's face and started threatening him and telling me he had a small penis and all sorts of stuff. And really started, yeah. But the good thing, so that could have turned really ugly because there's no way we could have stopped 30 guys beating the living daylights out of us and then doing whatever with the girls.
Yeah.
But once again, to the credit, the 29 guys dragged the one guy away.
Oh, good.
And apologized and went off.
Nice.
But we knew at that point that there's no one else we'd take out. That was now like 11-ish.
Yeah.
And we knew by 1 it was not a safe place for people who walk in it. Well, up from like 11 till 1 it was not safe to be around.
Yeah.
And then after 1 everyone's sleeping. So it was amazing how during the course of that day you could see and feel the moods changing.
Yeah, right.
And we were in control of 99% of it, but it only takes 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still think, yeah, between Malcolm and myself being fairly big guys, we would have been threatening enough that it wouldn't have been too much of a drama. And I can handle myself, and I'm hoping Malcolm can as well.
Yeah.
But it was just, and once again, we've got Facebook messages from these girls just so happy that they've got these great photographs and this great experience. And they said, why are you doing this? I said, well, now I'm a father of two young girls.
Yeah.
If my girls were somewhere overseas, and even if they were just unhappy with the hotel and not being able to communicate properly and they were a bit scared and somebody stepped in to help them, you know, that's karma. Yeah. Hopefully I'll put some karma forward in a country full of karma.
Yeah.
to experience, you know. So anyway, so they're two of the three favourite shots from that day.
Nice.
And my favourite shot from Holy, and probably the favourite shot from the trip, is the image I crafted to showcase the fun and the youth and the colour of Holy, and it's the boy in blue against the blue background.
Yeah.
Which I love as an image. But I moved him to that blue background.
Right.
Yeah, so it's you have to craft an image. He by himself, before the shot was taken, was pretty good. All that foam on him wasn't there.
Right.
It's actually happening during the shoot. You can see it flying in the air.
Yeah.
But he had this great colour. And there was this blue garage door not that far away, 20 feet away.
Yeah.
So moving him from spot A to spot B built the image.
Cool. Yeah?
It's manipulating the scene because it's not as it was, but... Yeah, you're trying to focus on a point. And if he's in a really busy environment, he gets lost in that busy environment.
Although you may have engineered the shot, it doesn't look contrived.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't engineer the foam because I had no idea that was coming.
No.
The fact that the foam happened to be the blue foam, not the pink foam, because there's pink foam as well.
Right.
I'm still getting that stuff out of my ears 5 or 6 days later. Because my ears got filled with the stuff several times. It was, yeah. I was shaking yellow powder out of Malcolm's ear for about a day.
Oh, wow.
So this blue foam is some kids come and just squirting this can just out of shot in the side of this kid's head. So it is something that's happening.
Yeah, right.
And once again, this is a shot, the camera's so covered, you can't see what you're composing. You're just praying for focus. You're praying for composition.
Nice.
And I love it. You know, it to me, that speaks of the experience perfectly. And you know why? Because it's simple.
Yeah.
There's a kid and some colour.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you're trying to showcase a fairly complex event in a way that speaks the most, and that simplicity works the most, you know.
Yeah.
So I like that. There's another shot from inside a temple I put up there with the lady twirling.
Yes.
And yeah, this is a sixth of a second handheld. So once again, this is talking about trying to go beyond the snapshot or the picture. So I'm shooting this thing, and this woman's not moving that much. She's only moving a little bit.
Yeah.
And these ladies are all singing, and they're clapping, and the move. It was a really beautiful, emotional thing. It was all women in this temple, in this area. Right. It was a really beautiful moment, and they were looking at me and smiling, and they're welcoming. Yeah, you can see, even though we're Westerners and we're taking photos of their special moment, they're so happy that we're there and sharing. So I started shooting. So I said, "Yeah, think, be a photographer. Don't just And so I said, "Okay, slow the shutter speed down." I kept slowing down and slowing down and slowing down to see how slow I had to go to get some of her movement in the shot.
Yeah.
So it's a handheld sixth of a second shot. So yeah, some of the people are blurry because they're moving and clapping. You know?
Yeah.
She's got this awesome spin going on.
Yeah.
It took me about 10 shots to get one where her shape was good.
Yep.
But, yeah, to me, this evokes a feeling and a power. And this is the thing about, we don't need sharp photographs, but ones that feel and have life and interest going on. And to me, that slow shutter speed and that movement across the whole board, and certainly her spin filling that space,
yeah,
brings life to a shot. Yeah, and this is what we should be challenging ourselves to do when we're in an environment. Do the safe shots. Get the shots that, you know, okay, I've got the record, but what can I do to make it feel?
Yep. Yeah.
What can I do to get some life and interest to the shot? And I think the last one I've got on there is a lady in red.
Yes.
So she's one of the actually, no, there's two. There should be that, and there should be a black and white one.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So the black and white one's my iPhone photograph.
Right.
From the Snake Charmers. And this girl's amazing strength in photo. Yeah. This power, this energy she's transmitting.
Yeah, you know? All through the eyes.
Some people say, "Oh, she doesn't look very happy." I don't find her unhappy at all. I find this power and this strength in her, which is just captivating to look at.
Yeah,
and I don't see, "Oh, I'm unhappy having my photos," because she followed me around these huts, getting shot all the time. So she was loving to be shot, but every time the camera went off, and she's laughing and giggling. Every time the camera came on, she went bang.
Yeah, right.
Fabulous, yeah. But for an iPhone shot, love it. And it's one of my favorite shots of the tour.
Yeah.
It's not the tool, it's the tool using it. Yeah. But the lady in red, she's also from the Snake Charmer village. You can see the face tattoos a little bit more there. And once again, there's a majesty and beauty and strength to these people.
Yeah.
There's a power. Yeah. And there's no coyness. There's no trying to hide and be silly. It's just this strength. They'll look you in the eye. They'll stand proudly and look at you and say, "Yeah, I'm me," and that's the men and the women in this tribe. And yeah. I loved it. It's a simple shot. It's a typical my type of shot.
Yeah.
But I love the strength in it.
Yeah.
So they're the images of what I've seen so far that really speak to me. But once again, they all come back to the moments.
Yeah.
The shot's nice, but if the moment behind it doesn't, if it's just something I shot out of the car window driving past, even if it was awesome, you wouldn't feel it. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, when people say, "Well, yeah, how do you take good travel photographs?" Well, go and feel first. Put the damn camera down somewhat and feel feel the experience and photograph what you feel.
Yeah.
Not what people are doing and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'll probably come up with might even some more photos to talk about next week. I don't know. But they're just ones I just quickly pulled up tonight to have a little chat about.
Yeah, nice.
So I said back to Zainabad.
Yeah.
So we went into the school. So the prince who runs the place we stay at, the accommodation camp we stay at, which are all mud brick houses and stuff,
right?
He's also our local guide. So he got us access to these sort of people, these snake charmers, which no one else would possibly, that we can't imagine would have been able to find these people. We're talking, we drive for 20 minutes down a dirt road in the desert, and there's a man standing on this track, and he just points, and he's waiting for us. At 7 o'clock in the morning after a 20-minute ride. This guy's there. He's been out since dawn looking for the camel traders, see where they've moved over the day before.
Wow.
Touch. That sort of stuff, it'd be very hard to replicate. But the prince runs this accommodation place and uses the money to fund a school in the village.
Oh, wow.
And to fund an orphanage.
Right.
And the school's got like about 450 students.
Whoa.
Probably 70% girls.
Right.
Which is just, in a country where, you know, girls have been second-class citizens for a very long time,
yeah,
that's a fabulous thing to see.
Yeah. You know?
And profits from this place go to run it. So we went in and we met the kids and we went in and they played some games for us. I played some cricket with them, badly, I might add. I might have added a bit like a fool. You know, I got hit in the leg, yeah, a little high, so I pretended to hit me in a horrible place. And yeah, I staggered around like I'd been shot for about a minute and then fell over in the dirt and just kicking my legs in the air. And all the kids laugh and having fun. But so we're going back to Zainabad at the end of February next year. And we're going to run a week-long lighting workshop there.
Wow.
So it's going to be all on natural light, on LED, on off-camera flash, and possibly studio lighting.
Wow.
And we're shipping in, they've got generators there. We can take generators out of the salt flats and the deserts and with models but we're also going to be using these nomadic tribes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we're going to get locals and nomadic tribes to be our models for these events. So we're going to stay out there for a week and do a full week long in the deserts, in the villages, all around the place. And part of the proceeds is going to fund the uniforms for the school for the year.
Right.
So for all the kids.
Nice.
So we found this thing that we can be involved with as an entity, Malcolm and myself, and we're getting 10 digital cameras from Ted's camera stores.
Yeah.
Taking them to give to the school, because the school did this awesome project last year where using just tablets and mobile phones, they made this great photo book about their village.
Wow.
Do a photo project every year that's year long running.
Yeah, right.
We use these photos. So we're getting all these cameras.
Oh, that's awesome.
And if my other sponsors come to the party, we're gonna set up a studio in the village and do photographs of the locals and have a printer on hand and be printing out and handing out prints to the people as we shoot.
Oh, wow.
And give that printer to the school.
Nice.
And all the paper and the ink and all this is out. So we're kind of trying to work this project around giving back, not just taking.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's an amazing location. It's amazing, phenomenal, amazing photo opportunities, great learning, an exotic place, and everything. And there's nothing, but this is the safest place of anywhere in India we were.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's going to be a fabulous event. So if anyone's sort of interested in that, keep an ear out. We'll be announcing details. We're just talking to sponsors at the moment, the logistics of getting like studio equipment in and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
But it's going to be a fabulous event. It's only going to be 12 photographers.
Wow.
And we're running a partner program for non-photographers. So if someone wants to come and their partner doesn't shoot.
Oh, like, nice.
Let's not be sexist, but let's say a wife doesn't want to shoot. We've got the local ladies will be doing Indian cooking lessons.
Oh, wow.
Every year when the monsoon comes through, the entire camp gets washed away. All the mud brick houses get washed away. So they rebuild. So they're going to do mud brick building, house building lessons. They're going to show people how they build. There'll be cultural visits into the villages and meeting people and learning about their culture.
Wow.
And the school where you might be able to do, I don't know, read a book or do some English lesson or a math lesson or just be involved with the kids in the school, which is part of the project and feel part of it as well.
Wow.
So there's going to be this partner program. There's going to be – and we're taking over the entire camp for ourselves, the entire place. So there'll be no other tour groups or anything else there. It'll be just our special space for a week or so.
Wow.
So that's going to be pretty awesome. And we're trying hard to keep it to about $3,000 per person.
Yeah, nice.
And that's all food, all accommodation, all drinks. It's a dry state, so there's no alcohol.
Right.
All food, all drinks, everything but airfare and visa, basically.
Yeah, right.
An entire week in a place that's just going to be mind-blowing. So,
wow.
Fingers crossed we can pull it together. We've already got the stuff off and going from the day we got back, so that's all pretty cool.
Wow, that sounds epic.
I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I think it's going to be not only will we learn some great photography stuff, but that will be secondary to this incredible experience you're going to have.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be like shooting all day long. We'll do like two shoots a day and then there'll be time to,
do your own thing.
But if you're coming with your partner, you can, or you just walk in the village and just talk and take photographs and they love it. Yeah. The kids are phenomenal, you know? Yeah. And just go and just enjoy photography as well outside of the learning, you know?
Yeah.
And if you are coming with a partner, you can spend some quality time doing fun stuff with them, or you can take go out in the flats and see, you know, wild animals and flamingos in the lake and all this. There's other stuff to do outside of our program. Nice. So it's going to be pretty darn awesome, I think. And we'd like to make that an annual thing going forward.
Yeah, right.
It costs 250 rupees for a uniform. It's about $5 Australian. Yeah. So if we can raise a couple of thousand dollars.
Yeah.
We can fund their entire school's uniform, and that money can therefore be put to better or other educational uses.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, they had a massive earthquake in the area, and they lost 5,000 people died. But wow. It was on Australia Day.
Oh, wow.
But the moment it happened, all the children were out of the classrooms doing a flag ceremony,
yeah,
and the entire school collapsed and they would all died.
Whoa.
So there were entirely new buildings there because the other one was completely destroyed.
Yeah, right.
But I knew they've moved to another old place, which could probably easily just as collapse. But just by the grace of timing, these kids are everyone's still alive and they didn't lose everybody. Wow. They could have easily, you know, 400 or 500 students if because the whole thing collapsed to like a pancake. So,
yeah, right.
So we feel very, very passionate about this place. We feel very connected with it.
Man, that's awesome.
We think it's lovely that we can maybe go and give something back.
Yeah.
And I think as photographers, enjoy an incredible experience, but not just be takers all the time. So
yeah.
Glyn at creativephotoworkshops.com.au. If anyone wants to be on the info list, let me know.
Yeah.
Oh, and Milena Pfeiffer. Milena, come to bloody Cuba. Don't worry about your eye surgery. You can do your eyes anytime.
You don't need eyes to take photos.
I'll point, you press.
You know? Yeah, there
simple.
You go.
So anyway, that's enough of me waffling on for an hour. Is there anything like urgent on the other list? Or
look, if you don't want to hang around, I'm happy to cover the rest of this stuff without you if you want to go to bed.
Yep.
But I'm going to cover the rest of the stuff I've got. Otherwise, we're just going to have so much next week that we won't be able to climb over it.
Okay. Well, I'll shoot off if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine, mate. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back. I'm only back for 1 week, so we can do next week, and then I'm off to Vietnam.
So you think it's bad?
I've got to finish a workshop, go to the airport, yeah, run Vietnam, get off the plane coming back, go straight to my daughter's birthday party. It's like, I'm cutting it fine. Pray for no plane delays.
Next week,
can you
record on Tuesday night?
Yes.
Beautiful.
As far as I know. Yes. No problem.
And what day do you fly out next week?
Oh, I don't fly until Friday night.
Okay, that's great.
So workshop Friday, fly it Friday night.
Wow.
And then I'm back for 1 week after that. So in the week of like the 22nd of April, then I'm away for three or four more weeks again.
Right.
Okay. So it's a bit sporadic this early part of the year, I'm afraid.
That's all right. That's all right. It's been great to catch up and hear all about India.
Could I also put a thank you out to everyone who came and did the podcast with you?
Yeah, it was great.
I really loved that. That was awesome. And in all honesty, I am going to go back and listen to every one of those episodes.
Okay.
Because not to hear things about myself, but just as an appreciation and as a thank you for caring enough about our little thing to want to come on and, yeah, share.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Want to replace this? No one's better than me that you said. Yeah, I have a fragile ego, my friend.
No, mate, your job is safe.
That was awesome. So I'm definitely going to listen to the episodes. I might whack them on for the next plane trip.
I was going to say, chuck them on your phone and listen to them on the flight to Vietnam.
Absolutely. So it's lovely to be home. It's good to chat with everyone again. And yep. Be safe.
Yep.
And talk next week.
All right, mate. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry to leave you with Bruce.
All right. Well, that was great. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I know he sort of dominated the conversation for an hour, but I was mesmerized by all of that. So there are a few things that I wanted to get through. One thing that I'm just going to work through it in the order that I've got everything in my little text document here. The first thing that I saw was the announcement of Sony's RX10 Mark III. You may recall 6 months ago I was very excited about the RX10 Mark II. Not that I was in the market for a new camera, but I was thinking, yeah, that's a pretty good-looking travel camera. Well, now they've come out with version 3, or not come out yet, they've announced RX10 Mark III. This thing has a built-in, now this is of course a bridge camera, so DSLR like body but with a fixed lens, so not an interchangeable lens camera. The lens that it has is 24-600mm and it's 2.8 at the 24mm end and it's f4 at the 600mm end, which is pretty amazing. 4K video. It's only a 1-inch sensor, so it's a little bit smaller than an APS-C sensor. But yeah, that's a pretty epic-looking little camera. I believe it's going to retail in the US for around the $1,500 mark, but we'll wait and see until it comes out. We'll know for sure. I saw a thing today on the IFL Science Facebook page, and hopefully most of you are familiar with IFLS. And this was a what do you call it? One of those things that tricks your eyes. Can't even think of the words now. But basically the title was, "This image can trick your brain and make you see it in color." So it's a black and white image. And this was all part of a BBC4 documentary called Color, The Spectrum of Science. I'm not sure if this is available to stream from anywhere, but it looks like it'd be a really interesting series. I don't know how many episodes are in the series, but anyway, the link to that video will be in the show notes for anyone who wants to check it out. A couple of things happened over the last week or so that have been pretty widely spread, certainly on my Facebook wall, because I'm friends with so many other photographers. One was the Adobe price hike for Australian subscribers to Creative Cloud. Aaron King said, and it was just a matter of time. The price of Adobe Photographer's subscription is going up to $11.99, quote, due to exchange rates, unquote, in our region as of May, which means I'm sure we'll see a price drop when the exchange rate gets better again. Right? Right? Crickets. Because a 20-cent drop in the dollar warrants a full $2 price hike. I'm fairly certain this means the price of the rest of the suite is going to go up as accordingly as well. Interesting side note to that is I pay the annual subscription, and I got an email the day that this news came out saying, just letting you know that the price is going to go up, but for you, because the anniversary of my subscription is right around about now, for me as an annual subscriber, my next 12 months stays at the current price, and I won't get the price hike until April of 2017. But for the monthly subscribers, those people who subscribe on a month-to-month basis rather than paying the 12 months up front, you're going to get hit with it as of May, which is only a month away. So very interesting way of dealing with it. But anyway, I guess that's up to them. They're obviously not in it for the charity. And David Marland sent me a message on Facebook and said, you know, maybe this is a good time to have that discussion about alternatives to Adobe's products, you know, in terms of other options for Photoshop and or Lightroom type functionality. So maybe when I've got a chance to have a chat with Glyn, so maybe next week, I'll try and keep that on the agenda for next week to have a bit of a yarn about that. The other big news, of course, was that Google this week announced that Nik software will now and forever be free. Now, again, Aaron King weighed in on this and said, I wonder if that means that it's going to become deadware, meaning that they're not going to develop the software any further. I initially came back and said, oh, I can't imagine that they're going to do that. You know, they bought the company. You'd think that they'll devote the resources to keep it going. However, I have since heard other rumblings that suggest that maybe that actually is the case, Aaron, that they're not going to develop it any further. They will just simply release, you know, the version that exists today, and it will be free forever. So if you do download the executable, probably best to hang on to it, keep it somewhere safe. So if you ever need to reinstall, you've at least got it. So if it does happen to, you know, that Google decides to shut Nik software down completely and take it off the market, which, you know, they've done that with other things before. It's not outside the realms of possibility. It's probably worth hanging on to the executable just so you can reinstall it. I have heard for years and years and years, people have raved about Nik software, particularly SilverFX Pro. I'd heard about it, had never tried it, saw the announcement, thought, oh, what the hell? If it's free, I'll, you know, what have I got to lose by giving it a go? Got to say, really like Silver FX Pro. But the thing is, when you download the executable, you're getting the entire suite. So it's their Analog FX Pro, it's their Color FX Pro. I think there's about 7 different apps in the suite. So, you know, hey, grab it while you can. Why not? Steve Crane sent us a message via the comments on the ShuttersIncPodcast.com blog. And he said, RAW support was introduced with Android Lollipop, but the device hardware needs to support it. I have an LG G3 and was not able to install some new RAW-capable camera apps I wanted to try. The LG G4 seems, however, to have that support. I haven't played with the new Lightroom on my phone, and I don't have an Android tablet, so I don't know if the RAW support is restricted to images taken on the device, which would probably have the hardware support restriction, or whether downloading a RAW camera image and editing it on Android is possible, regardless of hardware support. Well, Steve, I can say from first-hand experience that even back to Ice Cream Sandwich, Android has allowed you to edit raw images taken on another device. I've been running Ice Cream Sandwich on my Samsung Galaxy Tab S for, well over 12 months now, 18 months now. And yeah, I have, what's the app I have? I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but there's a raw processing engine app that I got from the Google Play Store. It cost me the princely sum of about $4.99, and that allows me to take my raw images from my A850, you know, transfer them across via USB on the go to the tablet, and then process them on the tablet, crank out JPEGs from those RAWs, and then, you know, upload the JPEGs to Facebook or whatever when I'm traveling. So yes, that side of it has always been there. When I say always, certainly as far back as Ice Cream Sandwich and possibly earlier, I don't know. Carl sent us a great little story from Shutterbug.com. Here's a unique wireless keyboard for computers, iPads, or Android tablets. And this is steampunk as it gets, people. This thing is physical keys that sit up half an inch, and they're all round, like a 1800s era typewriter. It looks fantastic. So the Quirky Writer Bluetooth keyboard. You definitely want to have a look at this. It's so retro, it's awesome. So thank you, Carl. That's great. Carl also weighed in regarding Instagram. He said, "Hey, Bruce, it's the only social app designed for photographers. I don't understand why you're not on it. There's a heap of people out there who love landscape photography. You can really get a greater following for your photography business by posting to it." David is correct in saying you cannot post a photo from the desktop to Instagram. You must use Dropbox or email the photo to yourself and save it to the camera roll. That sounds painful. Anyway, or better still, use Lightroom Mobile and sync a collection to it to use on Instagram. P.S. I also use the Lightroom Flickr plugin to upload direct to Flickr for the 1 terabyte of free storage, mostly family stuff, and I mark them as private. Cheers, Carl. I also heard from a guy called Rajesh Kumar from Melbourne, who has developed an app for photographers and potential photography clients. Rajesh, please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing it. I think the app is pronounced Lamha or Lamar. It's L-A-M-H-A-A. And essentially what this is an app that allows you as a photographer to allow GPS access from your phone to the app to let people know where you are at any given point in time, and that potentially people who might be in the market for a photographer can find photographers who are near them who have similarly logged in and, you know, allowed their position to be known to the app. So it's kind of, location aware service to help match up potential clients with photographers. So, yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out. David Marland sent me another story. Looks like the photographer can't win. This is all about Maxim magazine in America, who have just featured a plus-size model by the name of Ashley Graham on the cover of the magazine, which is great, but they went ahead and photoshopped it to make her slimmer. And this has really irritated a lot of her fans who, you know, obviously feel passionate about the fact that here is a gorgeous looking woman who is a plus size model. And, you know, it's great to see a plus size model get a front cover on a, you know, a high profile magazine like that. But for the magazine to then Photoshop it to make her look slimmer. So that's been a interesting can of worms. It'll be interesting to see if Maxim has anything to say to their critics for that. But anyway, that link will be in the show notes. So thank you, David. Adam sent me a story from Petapixel about the fact that Yahoo is basically trying to divest pretty much all of their business to anyone who wants to buy it, either in part or in full, which means that the whole of the Flickr website is now on the market. Apparently, Yahoo sent out letters to a whole bunch of companies just in the last week, basically saying you've got until April the 11th to put in any offers on any part of the Yahoo business. So we might be seeing one of the early incumbents of the interwebs in its death throes, people. I would say Yahoo is not long for this world at this rate. And certainly, you know, they've struggled over the last few years to try and find any relevance in the new age. They don't seem to have done a very good job of it. They've had a rotating door of, you know, CEOs go through there. Everyone was very, I think a lot of people thought, you know, Marissa Meyer leaving Google to go and take over the job as CEO at Yahoo was both a brave move and also the only ray of hope that Yahoo ever had. But it seems that she's not been able to turn the business around. Admittedly, she went across to Yahoo at a time when she had either just fallen pregnant or fell pregnant very soon after, and still managed to run the company right up until about, oh, I think it was like 2 weeks before she gave birth, and was back on deck within a month or so thereafter, you know. So certainly, you know, Yahoo have struggled. They've not managed to find any relevance for their business, and now they're putting it all on the market. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And the last thing I had was from Steve Peters, who sent me an intro or posted to the Facebook wall this story about not all lenses have to be razor sharp. This is a blog post by Neil Van Nick Kirk, I think it is. I'm not sure how he pronounces that. Called Pixel Peeping, and this was only posted a few days ago. And basically, this guy was saying that, you know, we like lenses for the way they exhibit bokeh, and that, you know, one of his favorite lenses are these cheap Russian, you know, manual focus lenses from Helios that, you know, he just loves. And they flare, they do all kinds of weird things, and they're not as sharp as, you know, say Nikon glass or Canon glass or, you know, a Zeiss lens for Sony or whatever, but they just have a character that makes them appealing to him as a photographer. So anyway, very interesting story. Thank you for that, Steve. And that will do it for this week. Apologies for the long ep. Couldn't shut Glenn up, but that's okay. And we'll try and cover some stories next week. And it looks like that'll be the only episode we get out with Glenn next week. And that'll only be 2 days after this episode comes out. So, you know, consider yourself warned. If you want to get stories in for the next episode, you'll have to get them in before Tuesday night, Australian Eastern Standard Time, because that's when we'll be recording. And then he's off to Vietnam for 3 weeks. So there we go. Oh, the camera is making its way around. Aaron let us know that she received the camera through the week and will be doing her best to make sure it's on its way to its next recipient within 7 days. So it's slowly making its way around. So if you haven't seen it yet, don't worry, it is on its way. All right, until we speak with you next, take care.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.